When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Into the feet of McLean. Lovely turn from Aaron McLean, who sets a new club record. Seven goals. Instead, there's McLean, and it leaps in. Gail Smith down for McLean, and now he has his hat-trick. A rasping drive into the top. McLean could be in for number four. Centre point, and through for Aaron McLean for his 25th goal of the season. Again, saved again. McLean, number 30 for the season for Aaron McLean.
Welcome to the other block, still in lockdown. I'm Jared, and joining me via his Motorola time port is Kisby.
Good evening. Is that an actual phone? I think you've made that up.
And Jim is also with us.
Hello.
And we've got a full squad tonight with, did I just call us a squad? That's with a youth now, isn't it? We've got a full lineup. And Tim is with us also.
Yeah, Super Hello, Sub's Tim. Here. Super Sub's starting today, so I'm happy with that.
Let's get down to the meat of this podcast. Kisby, what's your confectionery of the week?
I've gone for some caramel nibbles tonight. Last time, I don't think I was asked what my confectionery of the week was. It was Terry's chocolate orange, but the mini bite-sized ones, the ones that you don't have to use a sledgehammer to get into. If you buy the whole Terry's chocolate orange, you can never get into it, can you?
Jared doesn't need a sledgehammer for a Terry chocolate orange. Straight down.
Well, yeah, it's like anyway, a normal person having a Malteser, that is, for me. It's quite a simple thing. Before we start, our aim is to get into the top 10 iTunes UK football podcast before the end of quarantine. We've come close. I think we got, was it 12th or 14th? So basically we need to start a campaign to make it happen.
I think what we do need is good presenters, to be honest with you. Break into top 10, that would probably help quite a lot.
We've got to 12, that's why we've drafted in Tim to try and get into the top 10. We'll see how it goes. But we need to start a campaign to make it happen. We need people to subscribe and review on iTunes and share the podcast with a fellow Posh fan. Ideas on how we can do it. How can we push into top 10? That's what we need to do.
Get Blaine Kisby trending on Twitter. That'll be a good start.
Yeah, that's not a bad shout, that. Do you know what, this Blaine Kisby thing, it was just a joke at the start, and it's literally just, everyone's ran with it, it's great.
Mm. Yeah, a joke at my expense, I have to say.
Yeah, but we all love it, so that's all that matters.
That's a joke, that's laughing at me, not with me, isn't it, really?
We do that anyway.
I think we could have a chat with marketing at the club and see if we can get it as the shirt sponsor, or even if it's just a lot of the training gear, you know, next year, hashtag Blaine Kisby, or sponsor one of the players.
Perhaps entry into the Exodus Go Hagen fan club. We can Tim can sort that out for you.
Yeah, we can. In fact, you know, you can be honor. We're looking for trustees, treasurers, that kind of thing. So you could have quite a high ranking role, to be fair. And all you've got to do is just share the pod. Easy win.
So to become a member of the Exodus Go Hagen fan club, email us a screenshot of your iTunes review or of you sharing the pod to the yellow block at liquidfootball.net, and we'll send you some prestigious membership, card. I know some membership card or something of that along, maybe a certificate. Kisby loves certificates. We can go with that.
We can even laminate nice them if you like.
Even laminated, see? What more do you want?
Although my laminator's in the office that I can't get into, so probably not.
Right, let's crack on. as you all heard of the mini tournament proposal. So the top eight teams in the league, basically, it's basically like a playoffs, a bigger playoff. They're on about doing that, like, so we all play each other, or like a knockout competition.
I did hear about that. The thing about that is everyone's been banging on about the integrity of the league, right? We've got to keep the integrity of the league. That is not keeping the integrity, isn't it? Because what about Coventry? If I was Coventry, I would be dead against that, because in fairness to them, they would probably have won our league. Okay, it wasn't 100% certain. I know there were still enough games to go to.
They were certain to get promotion, though, weren't they?
Yeah, and it is unfair on them, and it does make it makes a mockery that, I think, personally.
It does. And not only that, we were all sort of happy about the fact that we had a piss easy run in. Easier compared to those around us. That's all goes out the window. You may as well just have a bloody pro evolution tournament or something a FIFA knockout. It's like, we can't do that
because Reece Bennett was shit at that. So
that's true. And we got knocked out the first round of the Football Manager one as well. So we're really not doing well on esports. Kisby's right. You play a whole season and you've got teams that have played some teams once, other teams twice. And then you just go, scrap that. We're just going to have a little mini knockout. And who's to say that the team in 9th or 10th wouldn't have ended up in that top 8?
Exactly. It makes the season just pointless, really. It was a pointless exercise, really, because all you have to do is virtually finish in the top half and you could be promoted as champions of the league. And it does make a mockery for me of that. I know whichever system you choose is going to be massively unfair.
I think at the end of this 3-week period, so middle of May, start of May, the clubs will come back to training. They'll have a 3-week training sort of period through May. You can test the players regularly. It's a closed circuit, as it was. It's only the players and the staff. And then come the start of June, we can go back to behind closed doors football. And again, although they're coming into close contact with other players, as long as each club is testing consistently, they're not coming into contact with people outside of that circle. I see no reason why football can't continue behind closed doors come June. And seeing as we're 2 or 3 weeks behind countries like Spain and Italy, they've started to already introduce their football clubs coming back to training. And if you do start the behind closed doors football in June, you can easily get the season finished by the end of July. And I think that's how it will play out. So I don't see any point in discussing things like knockout tournaments or mini tournaments, because I still think we can get this season finished.
Well, as we go on to, obviously we do start playing soon, there's been another proposal which has been taken to a bit more realistically than a mini tournament, and that's a proposal of 5 subs per game. That would be to combat fatigue. Obviously the players
fatigue?
Haven't been playing.
They were 3 months off.
Yeah, but that's the issue, isn't it?
Why not have 37 subs? Let's have 100 subs.
What's on the fans to play?
Well,
ideas.
It is, and also it's not like...
Kisby, I've not come up with the idea. This is an idea what's been suggested.
But it's like...
just do roll on, roll off.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like Kieran said when he was on it, it's not going to be, they're not just going to go, right, you're back to work tomorrow and your game's the day after. There'll be a period of a mini pre-season anyway to get their fitness up. And I'm sure that the players haven't just been allowed to kind of sit at home and do nothing. I'm sure they've had to maintain some physical level.
Imagine if they all get back into training in the shape of, well, me. George Boyd rocks up with love handles.
More entertaining, to be honest. The 5 subs things, I mean
Rush goalkeeper would be brilliant though.
Yeah, get rid of offsides. The thing is though, just jumping back to what we were just saying, I know we've talked about it before, but if you do get the matches started by the start of June, the infrastructure's in place with iFollow that you can easily get income coming back into the clubs. All right, it won't be as much as a match day with, you know, food and all that kind of stuff, but you can get people buying iFollow tickets. All they need there is a couple of cameramen at a game. They've already got local radio doing the commentary anyway. So you can easily get football back into people's lives, and the infrastructure's in place to do that.
I cannot wait. The Dutch division has been voided completely. No champions, no promotions or relegations or nothing. It's gone.
Which is a surprise. I think that's a real surprise. And I'm surprised that one of the big European leagues has jumped that quickly. I really didn't think that would happen with any of the big UEFA leagues. But it's a real shame. I just hope that, you know, we don't follow suit.
Fingers crossed. The Den Haag manager, Alan Pardew, he could get a bonus for avoiding relegation, which was in his contract. One could say he's played his cards right.
Can we edit that out, please?
Thoughts on Alex Neil's comments. Clubs who have furloughed staff shouldn't be allowed to spend the money saved on players next season.
I don't think that they're a business ultimately at the end of the day. And if they've used the furlough scheme, then they're no different to any other business. I get the argument that the big clubs that are using public money shouldn't, but I mean, it's interesting with Colchester today announcing that they're not going to be renewing certain senior players' contracts because of the financial aspect. I think that's just going to be the first of many clubs that follow similar kind of paths. This summer is going to be weird. Even if we do get the season finished, it's going to be an odd transfer window. I don't think there'll be any big transfers this year, which perhaps works in our favour with Mr. Tony, but I can't see clubs spending this summer like they would normally because they're all going to be fighting to make up for this.
Yeah, the thing is I think as well, a lot of the money that comes into football, certainly at the lower levels, isn't coming through the gate, is it? Through the fans and supporters. It's coming through the business interests of people who own the clubs. And, of course, their businesses, a lot of them, are going to be massively tanking over the next 12 months. Yeah. So the amount of money coming into that, certainly at the lower levels, it will hit the higher levels, obviously, but higher levels will always have a buffer.
It's a tough one, that is. There's been a debate on social media across all clubs on partial refund on season tickets if the season is cancelled. We have touched on this in previous podcasts, but it has raised its head again. What's Kisby's take on this as the tightest man on the planet?
It is true. I'm probably the tightest man in the universe, in
fairness. There's no probably about it.
I'm the sort of man, right? If I buy a tin of spaghetti from Aldi's for 29p and it's dented, I will take that tin back and get a refund. I am that petty when it comes to money. But, right, this is my view. When there are a lot of clubs that could go under, right, why are fans who fundamentally want their clubs to survive, why are they even considering a refund on just a few games, right? As season ticket holders, you already get a very good deal anyway, so you're getting a percentage off each game you go to. So you're already getting a good deal. Even I, as the tightest man in the universe, wouldn't try to push my club over into liquidation because I want to get a refund on 9 games. Well, it's not even 9, is it? What is it? 4, we had 4 or 5 yeah. games, whatever it was. You know, I can't understand fans who are so petty, who want a few quid back when they've already got a good deal on the season ticket anyway. That could be the difference between that club surviving or not surviving. So I think it's absolute madness and very not supporting your club to want to get any sort of refund on that. I can't
believe it. Are we all in the same boat on that?
No. Well, yes, I am. But just to play devil's advocate, I would look at it from another point of view, which is football season ticket holders. It's a business and you've not received your full product. So I don't necessarily agree with this. I'm just looking at it from another point of view.
Yeah, but it's not, though, is it? As a fan, you don't see it as a business. I know.
No, I know. I guess the way around.
I don't see it as a business. If I saw it as a business, I would be down London Road demanding my £3.99 back. But I'm not. I don't see it as a business.
Give it time, you will be.
Well, that's true. I say that now. But,
well, the way around it easily, I think, from a club's point of view, is just to give season ticket holders the option and say, if you want this percentage back, you can claim it, because then the real.
Oh, well, if you give me the option, I'll get it. I'll claim it back.
I don't think you would. I think you'd go, no, that's not right.
I wouldn't.
Because anyone who does claim it gets banned for life.
That's the way. You think that's his T-shirt?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
We're now joined by posh legend Aaron McLean. Thanks for taking the time out, Aaron, to join us. How's lockdown going for you?
It's not been too bad, to be honest. I've got a 7-month-old daughter, so she keeps me fairly busy, and you know, I've looked at it as this is a period in her life that I probably wouldn't have been able to spend this much time with her had I been a football. So, you know, I'm looking at the side of it and obviously dying to get back to football, dying to get back to work, but you know, there is, you know, that's the silver lining for me.
I think that's how everyone's taking it. It's a chance what none of us would have got with our family. And although it's not in the ideal, you know, circumstances, we can't have the quality time outdoors. It's still good to have that time, you know, as a group, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think being able to spend more or less 24/7 together. So, A, you have to like your partner, which is... and yeah, like I said, look, it's my first child. She's 7 months old. So me to be able to see her developing, you know, firsthand and day to day, is, you know, it's kind of been a blessing in disguise, but obviously not one that I would have wished for.
Still looking forward to getting stuck in again, though.
Oh, desperate to get back. It's tough. It's tough not being at work, having a genuine focus, you know, not having something to look forward to at the end of the week. Every day seems like it's almost Groundhog Day at the moment. You know, I don't even know what day of the week it is.
You're the first person I've ever heard has said that it's been really tough being away from work. All my other friends said it's bloody great being away from work, and they hope it goes on for like quite a long time.
Like, I love my job. I love going in every day, and it's very rare that you'll see me go in and not be full of beans, because it's, for me, I wouldn't want to do anything else.
It's funny because we were actually talking about this on one of the podcasts where we were talking about some professional footballers see it purely as a job and actually don't enjoy the game of football. And we can't understand how you can ever be a great footballer if you don't passionately love the game of football. But there are some footballers out there who literally it's a job. You know, they're not even that interested. And I always think that's strange. So it's great to hear that you love the game of football.
Yeah, I've come across a few. I know a few players that they really don't enjoy football. Once they're away from football, they don't watch it. And it baffles me, to be honest. But at the same time, you have to, for them, they're good at it and they earn a good wage from it. So
yeah. I don't get how you can go into you know, a stadium full of people with that raw passion and emotion and just not feel that and not. You know, I just, it's just an alien concept to all of us, I guess, being football fans, to be a professional footballer and not be living the dream and playing every minute with a smile on your face.
I mean, you don't get that as a chartered accountant, do you? You don't walk in the office and you get 10,000 people clap you. So it does, it's strange, isn't it? But
I think the people that say they don't like football, I don't think they dislike playing, you know, as you wouldn't play. I think they enjoy the playing, they enjoy the fans and all the good things that come with being a professional footballer. I think it's the hard work that they don't enjoy, because being a professional footballer is not easy. It's day in, day out, working hard on the training pitch. And
yeah, which we don't see so much, I guess, as fans. I suppose we only see the Saturday afternoon and the excitement that comes with being a footballer.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stress that goes with it as well. So I think the stress and the pressure, the training, I think they don't enjoy that, but most definitely they all enjoy the positive side of it, the fans screaming their name and when their wage is dropping their bank, I'm sure. Yeah.
so on the pod we'll be talking about your career in football and your time at Posh, but before we begin, thoughts on how the season will end. Can you see it ending?
I can see it ending. I think it's probably going to be behind closed doors. We just have to go with what the government say.
What do you think about this idea about having the top 8 teams do like a mini playoff for all the positions? I mean, we thought that was a bit nonsense, really. But what's your view on that?
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan of it. Obviously, we're in the top 8, so it wouldn't affect us negatively. But, you know, for example, if they were to end the league today and say, right, whatever positions you're in, that's where you're going to finish and the top two get promoted, we'd be fuming.
Where do you think we would have finished? Because we think we had a good shout at second place or even a very, very outside shout at the top of the league. So where do you think we would have finished, though, this season?
I think we'd finish top two.
Yeah.
I think we'd finish top two. And I think if the season is able to be finished, which we're all hopeful it is, then I think we'll finish top two. And we was in a brilliant reign of form. But at the same time, listen, all the lads will be fresh. And I'm sure that once we're back and all the lads get together, I'm sure we've got more than enough to be able to put another great run together and get that promotion.
We had Kieran Scarf on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he said you was due back mid-May. Is that still the case?
Yeah, at the moment, we're due back the 16th. So until we hear otherwise, that's the date we're all working towards. You know, we've had plenty of conversation when this first happened about different contingency plans and different, you know, if certain things happen, what we'd do. I know the manager and the fitness coach especially have been in regular contact with all the players and making sure that they know what's going on, what's expected from them whilst they're off. And, you know, I'm sure all the lads will come back in good shape and be more than ready to go.
You definitely need a mini pre-season though, don't you think, with all the time? I know they've all had their training regimes, but you still need a bit of time to get up to scratch, surely.
Yeah, definitely. Having this long period off, there's no way you could just all of a sudden go back and then after a week be expected to go and play 9 games in a row. So there is going to be a mini pre-season, but with the programs that the fitness coach has been giving all the lads, you know, they'll already be halfway there. So the work that they'll be doing, we'll be able to get through it a lot quicker than if you haven't been doing anything.
Normal pre-season training is very hard, isn't it? It's very tough, the actual normal pre-season. So you're not going to need the full tough sort of regime, are you, I suppose? But you will need a little bit of time to get sort of properly match fit.
Yeah, that's going to be the main thing. It's the match fitness, yeah. Which I don't know how long we'll have to be able to get that. But like I say, they've all got their base fitness. From the first day that we was off, all the lads had programs. And they're all on an app, so each day they send in what they've been doing, so the fitness coach can log it down, and you'll be able to gauge whereabouts everyone is in their fitness. And listen, some might need a little bit extra, some might need a little bit more time to get up to speed. But you know, I'm sure as an individual, if you're doing the right things, then you'll be a lot closer to that end target once we get back.
Sure. Aaron, you touched on the good form that we were in as a club, and we were talking earlier about how we had a pretty favourable run in, and we were in good form, and we fancied our chances. How easy is it going to be, and moreover, what can the management do to try and rekindle that form? Because obviously it's kind of like starting again, everyone's starting again, form's irrelevant now. How can you get back, other than winning games, how can you try and instil that back into the players?
Well, we'll go through what we've done up until now through the season, and we'll take out all the good bits and we'll show it to them. And listen, as players, after having this layoff, if you're not raring to go and desperate to get back playing, then you probably shouldn't be in the game anyway.
I think everyone's desperate, aren't they? The fans are desperate. We want to watch. It seems ages since I watched any football. I mean, it's not that long, but it seems like literally 12 months already to me, and I'm desperate to go and watch the Posh, and I should imagine everyone's the same, you know. And it would be such a lift to the whole country. The country at the moment is pretty much on its knees, I think, and it would be such a people love football in this country, and it would lift the whole country, I think. And it's so much more than just about the game, isn't it, I think, at the moment.
What I like about that, Kisby, is when we spoke about behind closed doors, when this all kicked off, you was like, no, everyone was like, no, I'm not having that. I don't want to watch it on iFollow and all that. And now
I'm not a fan.
We were so desperate. But we'd all take it, wouldn't we?
We'd take it. I mean, I can't wait to get back to London Road and watch football like you should watch, you know, with the atmosphere and, you know, the ups and the downs of it. And that's what football's about. Seeing your mates, you know, it's a community thing, football. It's not just a sport. And that's what I really miss. But I want to watch the Posh. You know, I miss watching it. And I just think it would be a massive boost to the country when football comes back. Obviously, if we bloody lose the first game, I'll be fucking pissed off. But, you know. And I will be moaning like there'll be no tomorrow about it. But I'm looking forward to that.
Aaron, if we go back to your early career, when did you know you wanted to be a footballer? What age, if you remember?
I wouldn't even be able to tell you. I didn't start playing football until late. I think I probably started playing at about 7, 8, like really playing for an actual team. Up until then, I never really wanted to. I didn't really enjoy playing football, but I didn't want to play for a team. But I enjoyed just going out and playing in the banjo with my mates. So it wasn't until about, I'm sure it was 7 or 8, where my friend was just badgering me about coming and playing for his team. So I went and played for him. And from there, I enjoyed it. And gradually, I just continued to play and improve. And obviously, as the years went on, I think probably leaving school and going and being a professional, that was probably when I was like, yeah, you know what, I can really make something of this, because obviously all my other friends were going on to sixth form and continuing their education, and I was leaving to go and continue my education in football. So that's probably where I really thought, yeah, I've got a half a chance of making something here.
I suppose it's quite a risk though at that age, because obviously you're still in education or just coming out of it, and obviously you're not guaranteed to make it. As like you said, your friends are going into, you know, to further educate themselves, and you're taking a different route. It's although it's everyone's dream, it's quite a risk as well, isn't it?
It's definitely a risk, and it's a risk that for a few years, when I got released by Leyton Orient, I wasn't sure whether or not that risk was worth it, because I'd obviously been at Leyton Orient for 4 years since I left school. Then I got released and I went to Aldershot in the conference. And when I went there, I wasn't sure whether or not I was going to be able to make it back into professional football. I'd not played that many games. And my ability, I always believed in my ability, but I knew that I had a lot to work on. You know, I wasn't a prolific goal scorer. And there was many, many things that I knew that I had to work on. But I was more than happy to improve as much as my coaches would help me.
Were you a hard worker as a footballer? Because not all footballers are hard workers. Do you think you were a hard worker, or do you think looking back now, could you have worked harder? Or
no, I'd say I was a very hard worker. I was always one that I trained how I played. So day in, day out, I knew that I didn't have the ability to be able to coast through training and still be able to perform on a Saturday. I knew that. And growing up, I was playing with people like Leon Knight, Jermaine Defoe, those kind of players who were naturally gifted, had the eye for the goal, could do things with a ball that you see grown men do. And I wasn't at the level that they was at. So I knew that in order for me to try and make a career and keep a career, I'd have to continue to work hard every single day. And like I say, once I dropped into non-league, it was almost like, do you give it everything you've got, or after a few years, this is probably going to be where I end up, and I'm going to have to go and find a job anyway. So, you know, luckily for me, it worked out for me in the end. But those 3-4 years were years that it could have gone either way, really.
Do you feel pressure? You talked about your confidence in your own abilities. When you did get the move to Peterborough from Grays, it was quite a tidy sum. Did you feel the pressure that came with that? Did you think, this is my shot, I've got to make this? Or were you content that, you know, you had the ability to see it through at Peterborough?
No, I didn't really feel pressure. The price tag never really, it wasn't really something that really bothered me, because I felt I was ready. You know, I think a year prior to that, I was going to leave and go to Accrington Stanley. And myself and Michael Kightley were at Grays. We was doing well. And I think Chester came in for Kightley and Accrington came in for me. And Mark Stimpson was our manager at the time. He just said, listen, they're not clubs that you want to go to. You're both good enough to be able to go to clubs that are going to help you to further your career. And listen, no disrespect to Accrington Stanley, but they were in our league. They'd just been promoted from the conference. So we'd just finished playing against them. And the manager just said, look, you'll be able to get a better move to a club that's going places and really going to be able to to show off your attributes. So, you know, I didn't end up going there, and it was the right time and the right decision to go to Peterborough, because Aaron McAntony had just come in. He was making me his first signing, and you know, once I sat down and spoken to him, you know, I was sold on the club. You know, he told me what his ambitions were, and his passion for it just made me want to hurry up and put my boots on and go out and play, to be honest.
And thank God you did.
I've noticed a lot of players who come in at similar time to you, Mikhail Smith, Boyd, that they've all said the same thing, even with Ryan Bennett as well, that after the, you know, after the chat with Darren McAntony and Fergie when he was there, is that just really made them, you know, believe in the project and want to join Posh.
Definitely. The thing is with Dower is he knows everything about you before you walk through the door. You know, his knowledge of football is second to none. You know, I sit down and I have chats with him now, and he'll be able to tell me the top 10 strikers in outside of the league. He'll be able to tell me their stats, their ages. He knows everything. You know, he's a real student of the game. And because when I walked through that door, he knew everything about me. He was telling me my strengths. He was telling me the areas that he felt I needed to work on. But he was telling me that, you know, if I come to Peterborough, this is what he's going to help me to do. And by doing that, I'll then get the opportunity to go on, be successful with Peterborough and go on and one day play in the Premier League, which at the time I was thinking, yeah, I'm not sure about that. But, you know, he was true to his word, and it all ended up happening.
What advice, obviously you've gone through all the leagues, like you say, straight from school into football. So what advice would you give to kids wanting to break into the game?
I'd just say make sure that you work as hard as you can every single day. You know, that's one thing that I say that to everyone, every young player. I say, listen, once you get to the end of your career, make sure when you look back, you haven't not achieved what you want to achieve because you haven't worked hard enough. So every single day is an opportunity to learn. And it's same for me now as a coach. You know, every day for me is an opportunity to learn. And having Scarfy, the Gaffer, Strax, you know, I'm constantly learning from these guys, and they're some of the best people that I could have possibly hoped to work with. And, you know, I'll continue to keep learning so that I can take that on into my career, and hopefully it's a long one in management and coaching.
In hindsight, is there anything you would have done differently looking back, or do you think you got it right at the time?
I'd say the decisions that I made at the time, I always made the best decision for me in a footballing capacity. I always worked hard. You know, there was never a period where I'd turn around and say, yeah, you know what, I kind of tossed it off a little bit there and I didn't put all my effort in. You know, I think there's going to be periods in your career where you're doing really well. There's going to be periods where things aren't going so great. But I've always been a pretty confident person and always one that believed in myself, and that even when I was going through a bad patch, that things would come good. And I've been really lucky. You know, I've managed to get promoted from every league in the country, which I would never have thought I'd be able to achieve, and ended, you know, managed to play in the Premier League, which again was, as a kid, is a dream, but to actually be able to go out and do it is something, again, I never thought I'd be able to. So when I look back, I don't look back with any regrets. I just look back and I'm really proud of what I've been able to achieve. And
there can't be many players can say that they've had promotion from each of the Football League divisions. That's quite a statistic, that.
Yeah, I don't know if there is many. I know, obviously, George played with me at Peterborough and at Hull, so he had promotions from League Two, League One, and from the Championship. But I don't think there's too many. So, listen, it's something that I would never have thought I'd be able to achieve, and especially moving to Hull at the age that I was. The dream that was probably, I looked at it as, if I'm going to be able to play in the Premier League, it has to be now. And if I don't get that opportunity, it's not going to be because I've not put in all the work that I can. You know, it's going to be because of opportunity and fitness and whatever. It's not going to be because I've not worked hard enough.
So obviously you signed for Posh when we were back in League Two, just after Dara brought the club. I remember after your high scoring season, I remember there was rumours that Wolves were rumoured to be in for you. I'm not sure how true that was, but I think by all accounts it probably was the case. Do you, looking back, I know it's probably a bit of a difficult question for you to answer, do you wish you'd have left at that point and gone on then, or are you happy that you did stick about a bit longer?
I'm happy I stayed. At the time, Wolves came in and they bid in excess of, I think it was 2 or 2.5 million. And I wanted to go. I wanted the opportunity to go and play at a huge club. You know, they were pushing for promotion to the Premier League. And for me, that I looked at it as, I've come this far. I want to now take the next step and really compete in the Championship and hopefully help them to get promoted to the Premier League. But it was just off the back of us getting promoted from League Two. So having sat down with the gaffer and the chairman and Barry, and, you know, they convinced me that if I stayed at Peterborough, we'd go and get promoted again. Now, having just got promotion the way we did from League Two, everyone was sure that we'd go and get promoted to League One, from League One to the Championship. So, you know, I think it was a lot easier decision because all the quality of player that we had, you know, the likes of George Boyd and Mikel Smith, Charlie Lee, because we had that kind of quality, I was always confident that if I stayed, we'd get promoted again. So I don't regret not leaving at all.
Who do you think was the best player in that team? Out of the Holy Trinity, who do you think was the best player?
George was the best player, ability-wise, and he connected everything.
You could have said yourself.
The thing is, we all brought different attributes.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't have worked if we didn't all bring different elements to the team, but I think in terms of creativity, vision, just technique and ability, George just had it all. You know, he's a graceful footballer that just knew how to connect the areas. And with him in the team, we always felt confident that we were going to get chances and we were going to score goals.
I used to think of you as what I would call an honest striker. What I mean by that is not particularly flashy, but someone that if that ball dropped to you in the box or outside of the box, you would score with that. You know, it wouldn't be anything spectacular, but you would put the ball in the back of the net. I think Craig Mackay-Smith was a slightly different player, and George Boyd obviously a very different player to that. But you all bought something. I can imagine. I can always remember you. You were a fantastic header of the ball as well. You almost used to defy gravity somehow by hanging.
Well, this was something I was going to bring up because I remember I took. I can't remember what game it was, but I remember taking my dad to a game. He's not into football whatsoever. But I remember it was a corner. There was a corner and Aaron was being marked by some absolute monster of a centre-back. And I remember my old man saying, he's never going to be able to out-jump him. I said, you've not seen him jump yet. I said, he's not human. How did you do that? How did you add that to your game? Because I think, what, you're about 5'7", 5'8".
Yeah.
How are you out-jumping 6'2", 6'3", centre-backs?
Yeah, it's just something that I've always had. I've always had a good spring, and it was a weapon for me because I'm so short compared to these big defenders. Most of them thought that they'd beat me in the air. It's more about timing and obviously making sure that you've got a good spring and being able to hang. So it's just something that naturally I have, and I just used it as a weapon, and that's probably why Craig scored so many goals, because I used to flick it on for him all the time.
Constantly, yeah. If we just go back to obviously when Wolves come in for you, do you think if you wouldn't have had, obviously you'd already formed the relationship with Mikael Smith and Boyd, do you think if that wasn't there, do you think you'd have been more tempted to move on then?
If the team, well, it wasn't just those two, you know, as a team, I'd had a bond. There was a lot of young lads that we all lived in Peterborough. We all socialised together. And for me, I had the best manager that I've had in my career in Darren Ferguson. So there was plenty of reasons for me to stay. And listen, there was reasons to go, footballing reasons, but in terms of the family that I'd been brought into in Peterborough, you know, to stay was, it wasn't as difficult a decision as it probably could have been. For me, it was an amazing period in not only my life, but in the history of Peterborough. So to even be thought of by the Peterborough fans is special for me. We created a bond at Peterborough, but it's a bond that goes way deeper than football.
I think you could tell as a team that you all got on, because it's fairly obvious when people get on and don't get on. You talk about Darren Ferguson. We have a very tongue-in-cheek Fergie in, Fergie out-o-meter, because not all posh fans are massive fans of Darren Ferguson. On this show, we all think he's brilliant. We all love Darren Ferguson. I can never understand why people don't. But if you were to talk to the posh fans, what would you say was made him such a great manager for you?
For me, he installed a certain belief in you that you could go and do anything. That obviously his upbringing was from Sir Alex Ferguson, and who's the greatest manager ever. So Darren Ferguson has that winning mentality. He has that winning gene inside him. And he portrays that onto the rest of the people that are around him. You know, for me as a player, he just made me believe that I could go out there and win games and score goals and be the best player on the park every single week. Now, I wouldn't go and be the best player on the park every single week, only like 90% of the time. But he installed so much belief in you, and his organisation, his detail is second to none. You know, he's from, like I said, for me, he was the best manager I played under. And I've played under some really good managers, and I've been successful under other managers. But for me, there was no manager that made me believe that I was even better than I thought I was than Darren Ferguson. And, you know, I do owe him a lot in terms of my progression as a player and as a man.
Is he the sort of manager that would give you the hairdryer treatment if you weren't following the instructions that he would set out?
I've had the hairdryer treatment once from him. Mm. I've had it once.
Only once as well.
It wasn't necessarily deserved.
is he quite, obviously, because we only see him like through the media and whatnot, in the dressing room, is he very much cut from the same cloth as his dad? Has he got a bit of a temper to him? Obviously his passion, but does he have that side to him as well?
Yeah, he has got a temper. If you don't do what he's asking you to do. But he's one of the most honest and genuine people that I know. His door's always open. If you ever have a problem with football, away from football, you know, he's very much a family orientated man, and you know, he always puts family first. So if you have any issues away from football, he's one that, you know, he's always there to be able to knock on his door. But in terms of his management style in and around the dressing room, he's always one to be having banter. You know, he loves banter. His banter ain't the greatest, but he loves having banter with the lads. He likes everyone to be happy, and he loves a happy camp. But at the same time, he makes sure that the camp's run properly, and there has to be rules and regulations. There has to be discipline, and he makes sure that, you know, if as long as you marry the two together, then you'll have a good environment.
Have you seen his new haircut, Aaron? He's gone for the isolation cut, a one all over.
I saw it the other day, and I was going to mention it, but I just thought, you know what, it's probably too soon, and especially with everything going on.
Everyone's got really bad haircuts in the entire country at the moment. They're either really short or really long, aren't they?
Yeah, mine's a bit in between at the minute. It's because I have a mohawk, it's kind of like the sides are growing out, and it's just a mess. I wear a lot of hats. As you see, I had a hat on when I first came on.
Just touching on, obviously, talking about Darren Ferguson then, and going back to George Boyd's done an interview with the Posh TV, and he said when, obviously, after the Newcastle game in the Championship, that was the one where Darren Ferguson left the club. Then he said, obviously, Mark Cooper come in, and he said that he found it hard that the players would take to him because, you know, you'd all grown such a bond with Darren Ferguson, and then for someone to come in with new regimes, new beliefs, it was a hard transition.
Yeah, I think everyone struggled with it. Listen, no disrespect to any of the managers that came in after Darren, but there was no one that came in that kind of had a patch on him, you know, in every department. You know, his organisation, his detail into everything. You know, you'd go into a game and you're fully prepared for absolutely everything. You know, and it's down to you to execute. If you don't execute it on the pitch, then that's down to you as a player. But, you know, at no point did you ever go into a game feeling unprepared. Once he left the club, I think the lads kind of just lost a bit of belief because we didn't have him in our corner.
Yeah, I know Boydie said in that you know, he wasn't really open to leaving before then, but then thoughts start to creep in once Darren Ferguson had left, because like you say, the belief leaves with him.
Yeah, definitely. And listen, like you say, other managers come in, and if they don't hit the ground running and kind of get the lads on side straight away, then it's tough for them as well. And I think any manager that was going to follow in Darren's footsteps was always going to be up against it, because we'd been together and been so successful for such a long time that only coming in and being successful was going to be good enough. And there wasn't anyone that I thought was, like I say, I don't think there was anyone that really, really matched the level that Darren Ferguson was at. And, you know, for us, it was such a shame for him to go. And from there, I think people departing was inevitable.
You mentioned earlier you played in all four professional English leagues, which, like we said, I don't think many people have done that. Which is the biggest step up in terms of quality of football?
From the Championship to the Premier League's the biggest step by far. Just the speed that... I think it's more upstairs that they're so much quicker. You know, people know exactly where to run. The execution of passes and finishes is spot on a lot of the time. And, you know, if you're not at that level, then you can get found out pretty quickly. From League One to the Championship was a big step. And I think purely because a year or so earlier, we were League Two players having not long come from non-league. So a couple of years later, ending up playing against championship clubs that, you know, with a lot of players that have played Premier League football, I think I found that probably the biggest step up for me as an individual. But in the main, I think the jump from Championship to Premier League is the biggest gap.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.